Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Monday, March 14, 2022. The time is 9:04 a.m. We're meeting in the State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Hughes, Senator Machicki, Senator Begich, and myself as Chair, Senator Holland. Senator Stevens may be able to join us a little later. Thank you to Mary Gwen, our recording secretary, and Talia, our moderator today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. Today, we will continue to work on Senate Bill 225 relating to teacher apprenticeship programs. I'll now bring 225 back before the committee. This is the third hearing for Senate Bill 225. Today, we're joined by superintendents from three urban school districts, Juneau, Mat-Su, and Kenai. On Wednesday, we'll be joined by superintendents from four rural school districts, Aleutians East, Northwest Arctic, Lower Kuskokwim, and Bering Strait. The goal of our meetings today and Wednesday is to get a firsthand account of the problem we are trying to solve. So today we're joined by Bridget Weiss, superintendent of the Juneau School District, Randy Traney, superintendent of the Mat-Su School District, Clayton Holland, superintendent of the Kenai School District. Thank you, Superintendent Weiss, for joining us at the presenter's table. Is it Weiss?
That is correct, yes.
And the other, Randy Traney and Clayton Holland, are both joining us by, I guess that's Teams. And in full disclosure, I believe there is no family relationship between myself and Superintendent Holland. So I might have to get him to confirm that. But superintendents, please state your name, affiliation, and location for the record. I'll start with Superintendent Weiss.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Bridget Weiss, and I'm the superintendent in Juneau School District.
And Superintendent Traney?
I'm Dr. Randy Traney, the superintendent of the Mat-Su Borough School District.
And Superintendent Holland?
I'm Clayton Holland, the superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. And Mr. Chairman, I'm no relation to you that I'm aware of. I'll confirm that.
Thank you so much. I'm going to start the conversation today by asking four questions, and I'll ask each of you to respond to each question before moving on. Once we finish these initial questions, I'll invite members to pose their own questions, or if they come up with some questions coming off of these questions, that'll be fine. We'll just kind of go round robin, and I'll start with a new person each time just so it doesn't feel like somebody's got the pressure on them to maybe always be the one to be the first one to answer. But we'll start with here at the presenter's table. Can you describe the challenges you're facing when trying to fill classrooms with qualified teachers? Superintendent Weiss?
Thank you, Chair Holland, members of the committee. It is a real problem. It is not hypothetical. It is substantial, and it is real, and it has been ongoing. So it certainly is aggravated by the climate of working our way through a pandemic. But really, this was pre-pandemic. We were having extraordinary challenges filling special education positions, as an example. The pools for regular ed positions have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. When I was looking for a teaching position, which was a long time ago, pools could be in the hundreds for elementary teaching positions in the state of Washington and in Alaska. So the situation has changed dramatically. For us specifically in Juneau this year, as an example, we have five special education teaching positions that went unfilled this year. That is really extraordinary, and I can talk later about the impacts of that. We also have a Montessori elementary position that has gone unfilled all year. That is part of our K-8 Montessori school. The challenges are that there is just simply too great of a demand for the supply. Pre-pandemic, about a year before, I went to the state of Michigan to recruit special education teachers because we had some from the state of Michigan, and they were highly successful in Juneau. They loved the climate, the environment. They were highly skilled teachers. There were no special education teachers. I went to the University of Michigan. I went to Eastern Michigan. I went to Western Michigan job fairs. The bleachers that used to be filled with teacher candidates to start these fairs were scarce with people. And virtually, I spent all day at the University of Michigan and did not talk to one qualified special education teacher. And this was pre-pandemic. So it really is. It used to be that teachers would get certified and take a special education position as an entryway to regular ed because it was so hard to get a regular elementary teaching position, as an example. those days are long gone. And so the challenge is just real, and we fight for teachers. Even locally, we have some great grants that are, we work so closely with our tribal agencies. Well, all of these initiatives around education take human resource. They take people. And so our teachers leave the district to go work with our agency, other agencies in town to do good work around education, but it removes really highly qualified teachers from our classrooms. So there's really stiff competition.
All right. Thank you, Superintendent. Why Superintendent Training?
It's going to sound like an echo chamber. We have very similar problems. Each year we need to hire around 120 teachers. We do an exit survey for our teachers who are leaving in any given year. About 35 to 40% of our vacancies each year are retirement. And so the rest are just due to attrition. And then so we ask those folks who are leaving, like, why are you leaving? And their number one and number two reasons are personal reasons, and they're leaving the state. It's the leaving the state one that I think has changed, you know, since the late 80s when I graduated from college and started working in Alaska. We end up with a lot of teacher tourism now that didn't seem to happen when I was younger. People would come from out of state and they begin teaching in Alaska, and then they kind of had some golden handcuffs on them because of the retirement system, so they'd stay. And now what we see is young folks come up, they join the teaching ranks, they have that experience of being in Alaska, but there's nothing that really keeps them here. So then they move on. And then to echo what Bridget was saying, by far the hardest positions for us to hire for are SPED positions. We're a locally desirable district in the state. So, you know, we have lots of teachers from rural Alaska who want to move to the Valley. And so that's helpful for us. But from a statewide perspective, we're robbing Peter to pay Paul. We have several people whose full-time job it is throughout the entire year are in charge of trying to attract and find teachers, going to all these job fairs like Bridget was suggesting that she's done in the past to try to make sure we're full. And we've been able to do that, but just barely. And then our sub pool, there just aren't enough subs. There aren't enough certified subs. So our qualifications for being a sub in Mat-Su are really, really minimal, and they didn't used to be that way. There just aren't enough certified teachers in the state of Alaska. I looked up some information. It sounds like at the peak, the University of Alaska system was only producing about 25% of all the teachers needed in the state. So we're in this situation where we have to have people from out of state, but we don't have anything that keeps them here anymore. So very similar to what Juno is experiencing.
All right, and Superintendent Holland.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I'll be in echo chamber as well. I'll try to condense it a little bit. But, you know, going back, I've been in this district now 20 years, district office for 15, and going back just in that 10 years ago, we used to have at least 10 to 20 qualified applicants for each position in general ed. And now I think we're lucky to have two or three, sometimes even one, who is actually a qualified person for a job. And that's for general ed. Special education, the same challenges. This is the first year that we've actually not filled all of our positions, and we really have been saved by retired teachers coming back to our ranks. We changed some things to give them unlimited, you know, if you work for the KPBSD before, then we're going to accept all your years when you come back. And they really filled the gaps for us. So it is concerning as we go forward into this next year, just given the lack of applicants the last three or four years, what we're going to be facing this year. So that is the big thing. And same thing that we hear a lot when people are choosing to leave or backing out. This is the first year, when I say the last couple of years, people backed out before getting here. We used to not have that. They committed to coming here. They came here. And a lot of people cite the retirement structure as the issue. They want to go to a state where there's a defined benefit plan. And so that does seem to be the big challenge. Also, when people see the cost of living here and then the housing market, that's a more recent thing, our housing shortage, at least here on the peninsula. So with that, the Kenai is a desirable place to be. We've always relied on rural Alaskan educators coming back out. and that we pick up a lot of them. I'm sure the same way Matt, Sue, and Juno do as well. Given the struggles they've had and the fact that you'll probably hear more about this next week, they're using a lot of educators with J-1 visas for temporary coming in from the Philippines or other places, that we don't see that pipeline really continuing the way it used to. So that's one of our concerns going forward as well.
All right. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Superintendent Holland, can you, what does it say on your mug? Right. So on the data question, we're 1 million teachers short in the U.S. right now. Do you know that there's a differential between the unfilled positions in states with defined benefit plans and teachers in states without a plan? Because it seems like everyone's short. Do you have any data on that, or do you know where we can find that data?
Through the chair, I'll respond to that, Senator Machicki, that I don't have the hard data on the differences between, say, in Oregon, who has a defined benefit, and I believe Washington even has a kind of a combo similar to what we're looking at now. And Dr. Trady may be able to answer that one for Oregon, but I don't have that data. And the second part of your question on that.
Well, that was whether there's a connection between the unfilled positions between defined benefit states and states like ours.
Yeah, thank you. I don't have the data. I just have the anecdotal from people telling our HR department what's, you know, why they're not coming and why they're choosing to leave instead of staying for an entire career.
Superintendent Trainee, do you have you were mentioned. Do you have anything to offer?
Yeah, no, I don't have any hard data other than just those anecdotal stories. You used to hear teachers and they'd always be talking about their high three and, you know, I'm going to stay. And you just don't ever hear those conversations for our young teachers now. And it's about two thirds of our employees are under tier one, tier two. And so the rest of the employees are under the new system.
And, Dr. Crane, you had mentioned that there aren't enough certified teachers in Alaska, and I think we've seen the numbers like 14,000 certified teachers in Alaska. Is it maybe there's just not enough motivation to keep them in the system? It looks like Superintendent Weiss is wanting to jump in on that one.
Yes, Chair Holland, I do think it's a combination of things, which is one of the things I love about your bill, is that there are some combination of solutions, because the problem is complex, and it is definitely a layered problem that we have. Our salaries are very relevant to Washington and Oregon. In the old days, what brought teachers here was that they could come for the adventure. They were inspired to stay more than 5 years, which is right now you'll hear advertising come for the adventure. We don't want teachers for a five-year adventure. We want them to come to commit to our children and our communities for their career, and there's just no incentive for that. And so I asked one of my board members, because I was talking with my board the other day about these challenges, and she is one who came to the state as a teacher, and she's a retired Juno teacher. She's now on my school board and contributes a lot. And she told me a story, and this morning I said, Dee, please send me the details of your story because it is very poignant. In 1981, she came to Juno as a teacher, and she was in step five on a salary schedule in another state with a master's, and she was making $14,500 a year. The reason this started is because I made a comment that my first teaching contract in the state of Washington was $14,600, and that was in 1984. She had a 25-year defined benefit program as part of that, plus, this is another key, full Social Security benefits. So that's what she left to come to Juno to teach. She came to a salary of $28,000 and a 20-year retirement option. So, again, it's not one piece to the retirement. I do think that it is all of the different layers. If I'm going to make the same amount and I'm going to relocate my family to a new state farther away from my own family, then I have to have some assurances that I'm going to be able to support my family long term and some inspiration to stay longer than 5 years.
Thank you, Superintendent Weiss. Anything else from Superintendent Trainee?
No, we hear those same exact kind of stories.
I just want to make you that offer because it was directed. You. I don't want you to feel like you're
left out.
All right, Senator Hughes.
I don't know if anyone can answer this. Good morning. Thank you all for being here, including my superintendent. Pre-legislature time, I was working in the healthcare field, and we had a shortage, and there were federal programs to provide loan repayment for healthcare providers that would come to underserved areas. Mm-hmm. Is there any federal program? Does anyone know? Because it would seem with, or is there any conversation about something like that starting? Because it seems like we certainly could qualify, at least for our more remote areas. I'm just wondering if anybody is aware of such a program.
I'm not sure if there's any active programs. I'm not aware of any, but that's a great solution, option for us to pursue and to see. Having a 29-year-old son who just finally entered the teaching field after doing some other things for a while, those are the kinds of incentives that young people need. He cannot afford a home in the state of Washington where he's teaching in Spokane, Washington. He cannot do it on a beginning teacher salary there. And those kinds of incentives would, again, be a resource that young people would begin to consider this field again.
And as follow-up to that, what we did, and as I worked as an advocate and worked with Representative Bob Herrick, we set up a companion state loan repayment program, and it was that, but the provider had to serve the time before they got the payment, so they didn't get it ahead of them. They would get quarterly payments based on them providing, you know, working here. So anyway,
and that was Superintendent Weiss who responded just for diagnostic purposes. And I have Mr. King from my staff. Please put yourself on the record. You have some input to offer on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed King, Staff Senator Holland. Just want to point out to the committee that I did reach out to the Department of Education, and Ms. Sena Eifert is looking into this, looking at SB 93 from the last legislative cycle as a kind of an example where that loan repayment program for nursing and healthcare professionals was provided, and trying to see if there's an avenue to include into this bill, which she will be here next Wednesday to discuss that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Michicki.
Sorry, I won't spend a lot of time on this. We, when through the pandemic, we had trouble filling service positions, right? Restaurants and hotels and tour companies and things like that. It kind of grew to construction positions, you know, $80,000-$85,000 a year jobs, and now the slope is having a difficult time filling those positions. So I'm not scoffing at what you're saying at all. Mm-hmm. Just trying to identify across the board in every state, we're having trouble finding people that want to work right now. And I'm just wondering how much weight to put on DB versus other societal issues right now on getting people back. So that's kind of the primary reason for my question. I'd love to see the data, though, in relationship to those other states that do have plans. Or other incentives that perhaps we're not using. Thank you.
All right, Senator Begich.
Just I've been trying to do some research on the question Senator Michicki was asking, and NCSL. We should just request it from NCSL. They did a study in 2009. We were the only state at that time with only a mandatory defined contribution plan. Every other state either had a defined benefit plan, or there were two states that had a hybrid plan and three states that had an optional plan. So we stood alone as being the only defined contribution state. Every other state had a defined benefit option, and in two of those, five of those states offered also a defined contribution. So I'd be curious, that was 2009, it's outdated. Be curious to see where we are now, and perhaps staff could, perhaps Mr. King could ask NCSL for an update of that study.
And on that point?
And just a reminder that House Bill 220 is going to be the retirement bill, and we will probably have that in front of us at some point. But, Senator Hughes?
Yeah, and this is anecdotal, but there was, I remember attending a gathering of firefighters who were promoting going back to changing our retirement system. But I talked to a couple of the young firefighters, and I think this probably impacts young teachers. Some of them actually like portability, mm-hmm. and It's just a different mindset of not settling in one community forever. So I think that's a societal factor that Senator Michicki is part of that discussion, that it's not, it might be a solution for some, but it's not going to be the solution for all. That you're just going to see a more transient teacher population, I think.
And I believe the comment was made nationally, we're down a million teachers for some reason or another. But Senator Begich?
Yes, I just got a text from Dr. Parody that literally this issue was just asked in Senate Finance, and we are the only state that does not have a defined benefit plan for new teachers.
But we're not the only state contributing to teacher shortages. It's apparently a national problem.
True. The point that Senator Michicki, at least the way I read the point you were making, Senator Michicki, was, is there a difference in recruitment between those? And it would be impossible to know because 49 states have a defined benefit and only one state doesn't. So it would be different. Mm-hmm.
Getting back to Senate Bill 225, and we'll start with Superintendent Trainee at this point, and I'll get back to my questions. So is there anything you can do in your area, in your position, to deal with teacher shortages facing Alaska?
Yeah, so we are launching a program. It's going to go next year, and so this, I guess, is the beta test of this. And I'm modeling it off of something that existed in the state when I was a kid. It was the Alaska Teacher Scholarship Loan Program, where you were, the state of Alaska would give you $7,500 a year back then, which was plenty, and you could go to school anywhere. And if you came back and taught in rural Alaska, it was forgiven. And that loan program no longer exists for students in Alaska. And I thought, well, could I reinstitute that at least in the MATSU? And so we searched around looking for a partner. We did find one, Chadron State College in Nebraska. They were here a week before last. We toured around the high schools with them. And the offer to our students, to our MATSU students, is one that where I'm trying to address the teacher shortage problem as well as the paraprofessional shortage problem. And we're offering the kids this. We will pay for you to go to Chadron State. We'll forgive all of your loans for you to go to Chadron State College. You'll do your coursework here in the MATSU. Chadron State will let me, the superintendent, pick who the teachers are from MATSU teachers. So the people with masters and doctorates could be the instructors. We don't have to. They will also supply the instructors, but we'd rather have a cohort of students up here with a cohort of teachers that work with them. While they're going to school at Chadron State remotely, they will have their work study program, which will be employing them as paraprofessionals in our district. Each kid would have like a half a week job, so a half-time job. And so they would like pair share a particular job. Maybe two students would be an aide in a certain teacher's classroom. One of them would be in the mornings and one would be in the afternoon, something like that. So they'd go through and they'd get their four-year degree, their bachelor's from Chadron State College. And then they would agree to work for the MATSU for the next 5 years. And each year we would forgive a certain percentage of their loans, exactly the same way it was when in 1985, 10% the first year, 15, 20, 25, and 30. And so we're going to see how this goes. If it works, I'm willing to offer it to any other district. You know, like a rural district wouldn't be able to pull this off as well as we could, but let's say a lower Kuskokwim, they wanted to put money in for some of their local students. The students could come here, they could be part of the cohort. They'd work in the MATSU as a paraprofessional for the 4 years as their work study, and then they could go back to lower Kuskokwim and do their 5 years of service. The idea here is that instead of getting tourist teachers, we get real Alaskans who like Alaska. They want to stay in Alaska and try to incentivize it. And the only reason we're able to afford this is because we have such a teacher shortage and such a paraprofessional shortage. I have money I want to spend every day and every year to hire people, and I can't. So it's not like this isn't There's an actual cost to this. It's going to cost the Mat Su money, but in the meantime, we actually get employees that we want anyhow, and we can never find them. So that's one thing we're attempting.
Superintendent Trainee, I think I've heard this program before, but is it Chevron College or Shadron?
Yes, Shadron.
Shadron. Okay. Senator Hughes.
I'm just curious, did you have conversations with our university to try a similar arrangement? And why did you not go that route?
Yeah, that's the other one. We're willing to do it with anybody, especially University of Alaska. Shadron State has been more flexible and moved much faster than the University of Alaska.
Thank you.
All right, Superintendent Holland, do you have anything to offer on what you can do to deal with the teacher shortages?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Holland. So similar to Randy, we're not doing it for our students. I heard that idea. I really like what you're doing up there in the Mat Su, but we are doing something similar with our paraprofessionals, also with Shadron State. And I think going back to that UAA question, that really bothered me that we weren't going in-state for this. But Shadron has just developed they've got it dialed in on how to do this remotely and make it work. And I think that would be something great for UAA to this modern time to have it virtually lined out for us and be competitive in that regard. But we are focusing on paraprofessionals becoming educators. And for the same reason, our paraprofessionals are already committed to our community. They're here. And we find that those folks end up being some of our best teachers, just having that ground level experience, what it's like to be, not the teacher, but they see all these different classrooms. So focused on that, we've done some things to our pay scales during our last negotiations that we are accepting more years. We're accepting 12 years of in-state experience. We're accepting unlimited KPDSD experience, drawing people who had been with us before. We're maximizing what we can do for out-of-state people, which is currently 8 years experience if you have a master's degree or 6 years with a bachelor. The problem with that is we're still doing the same. We're drawing from somewhere else when we do that. So it's not helping the state necessarily. It's really helping us. We've really transitioned to remote and virtual job fairs. So we're hitting all 50 states with our virtual job fairs. We are adding moving expenses to anybody moving up from anybody moving here to the peninsula. We used to just do that for hard-to-fill positions, they've all become that way, but it was our villages and our special education. And we're working with KPC to see how we can use their dorms for new people coming into the Central Peninsula. As far as housing has been a big issue the last year here with everyone moving to Airbnb and doing daily rentals. And so Seward, we actually had no house. Our principal still does not have a house in Seward, so housing is an issue for us. But we're trying to remove some of those barriers the best that we can. And then really focusing on our mentorship, what we do for mentorship for new folks and selling that to people as well. But a lot of recruiting. Unfortunately, a lot of that recruitment comes, at the expense of other locations in the state. We've got an ad campaign that's been at the Anchorage International Airport. You might have seen it if you've gone through Anchorage promoting the Kenai. And, of course, that means then maybe Mat Su. I felt bad about doing that, too. But just knowing that every rural educator coming through the state will probably at Christmas and that other times will go through the airport. And when they're in TSA, we'll see the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. But those are some of the things we're doing.
Senator Michicki.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. It's pretty important, just this area of discussion. Do you guys have a group of superintendents that gather on kicking around other ideas on what? So I don't know what the support of a DB plan is in the legislature. We'll see what happens if it gets over here. I don't know where that bill is and how senators feel about it. That's kind of a part of this discussion. But have you thought of requesting funding for a retention bonus? Maybe a graduated increase or a specific bonus that comes at 5 years, one that, significant bonus at 5 years, something much more significant at 10 years or something like that. I mean, are you kicking these ideas around together where you might come to the legislature with a request if I don't know that a DB does it when you're competing with 49 other states that have a plan. And I'm not twisting what I said earlier. I was unaware that we were the only state without a DB plan. But kind of like in business, the extra little service that you provide often is what makes people choose one store over another, because of just that, you get that right nugget or that right collection of nuggets where people go, you know, Alaska's cool and they have this and I'm going to give it a shot. And once they get here, they realize if they're here for 5 years, this other thing happens, and at 10 years, this other thing happens. Is that something that's happening with educators on a leadership level to try to find the right nuggets to keep people in Alaska?
Anybody? Superintendent Trainee?
We're all three staring at each other to see who's going to answer this one, so I'll take a stab at it. We have an informal meeting that we call the Big Five, which are the five large superintendents from the five largest districts, not large superintendents. And we meet every other Friday. And so we share lots of the problems that we have as large urban districts. And we talk about things like this. And then officially, there's the Alaska Superintendents Association. I'm actually on the board. And that idea I can bring to the board, that specific idea about requesting funding for incentives, I guess, 5 year, 10 year, or, you know, some, we could look at that as a state board.
Anyone else? If not, Superintendent Weiss, you can move on to like what you're able to do in your district, or if you had any input to offer on Senator Machicki's comments.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Holland. To take on to that last question, I do think that we have some existing structures that we use and we could leverage more. You know, it often feels to superintendents, I will speak for myself, but I think I probably represent many, that, you know, we are no different than any other layer in our organization right now. We are spent and we are really lifting our organizations up on a hourly basis, getting through this experience together. And so the amount of quality time doing really the constructive dialogues that superintendent leaders should be doing has been sparse in the last 20 months. So we are as well sort of in the survival mode, but we have structures there and we do that, but probably not as early and on the front end engagement in terms of potential legislation and potential contributions we could make to amazing ideas that come from all of you. So that's something that just as a leader in the state of Alaska, I would love to see us in a year from now be in a different place, where as superintendent leaders, we really were on the front end of generating ideas, supporting your ideas, and really having that quality of think time that we need to, because we have a lot of very talented people in the chair of superintendent in the state, and I don't know that we leverage it as well as we could every day because of our conditions. To answer your question number two, we do partner with UAS here, University of Alaska Southeast, our Juneau School District, through providing an Ed Rising program, so an Educators Rising program, where we teach a course in our high school that supports early learning of being an educator. So we do partner. Those students get experience in our schools, and we hope that that is informing them to maybe move in that direction. The other piece to that puzzle is we're working closely with UAS around dual credit and having more and more students and a broader experience of students attaining post-secondary credit before they leave us. So really developing that middle school model in a very local way with UAS and Juneau School District. And we're really excited about work done this year. We've created a work team. Chancellor Carey and I and a couple others have met, and we just launched a work team, a joint JSD-UAS work team to develop that. And again, any head start we give to students before they leave, it's more likely. The statistics are really clear. Their likelihood of completing that college degree. So combine that with our focus on educator rising, we feel like we might be getting, you know, a little bit of traction. Otherwise, it really is trying to support our teachers, increase the morale. Who are our role models every single day in class that might inspire a young person to become a teacher? it is their teacher. You know, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, is because I literally had a couple of teachers that completely inspired me. It is hard to be inspirational in this moment of ours. And so really just on a daily basis, trying to lift up the Juneau School District group and remind them of why we do this work, make sure their needs are met the best that I can, so that they will be inspirational in their classrooms, because that's one trigger place where we need them to be inspiring to the vocation and not bemoaning the efforts and the challenges of the vocation, because there are many. So that's just another sort of unofficial, informal, as Randy said, like our Big Five meetings are, way that I'm trying to help contribute to that.
All right. Thank you, Superintendent Weiss. So my next question up would be to Superintendent Holland. And you just hear about what y'all are doing. I mean, it sounds like an expenditure of finances too. But how does high teacher turnover affect finances, available finances, and the ability to provide quality instruction?
Thank you, Chairman Holland. And through you, I'll also answer Senator Michicki's question. Just as far as the Big Five collaboration goes, you know, being a first-year superintendent in this crazy year, they provide support for me to actually make it through this year. So a lot of the year has been about survival. We're finally getting to that place of, as a group, I think, where we are thinking about other things and forward. You know, we've been doing that all along, but just being able to commit more capacity to that. And so I appreciate that question. As far as the impact of high teacher turnover rate, there's a study, and I can't cite it right now, but each new teacher, when we have to do this, is about $20,000 cost to the district. When you factor in recruitment, training, you know, all the historical knowledge and training that we put into people and having to do that again, there's a cost associated with that. The non-financial piece is really about that connection with our students, I think on multiple levels. I think all of us having grown up with educators are probably in those buildings and those communities for a long time. I grew up in Eagle River, and I still, you know, Coach Mack Center was one of my old coaches, and, you know, Mr. Starr, owns the coffee shop, Jitters, and those are people who are still there that I was connected to all along. When we have that turnover rate, our kids aren't making that connection. They're not getting anchored into the community. So that whole social-emotional development piece is a concern. I think about that a lot in rural Alaska. When you have this continual turnover and new people coming in, now we're starting to see that here. There's that connection piece. Kids learn best when they trust the people they're with and they know them. There's a relationship. And so that whole, I think whatever we do, you know, whatever bill we put forward, if we don't have a staff that is in place and there year to year, it's going to be a struggle. Our reading levels will struggle as a state. Those social emotional development skills, those pieces that we want kids to become anchored with their staff members. So there's that part of it. And then I think just, you know, the difference, I think I probably covered it, just that continuity piece. And then that recruiting, and I think the other pieces, we're having to fill gaps at the school level too with teachers that are teaching out of their content area. So if we can't fill something, we're often moving people in to cover who aren't experts in that area. And I think that's another impact that we have to be aware of. But for me, for our students, it's that continuity with their teacher.
All right. Thank you, Superintendent Holland. Superintendent Weiss.
Thank you. Yes, I think along with all of those things that Superintendent Holland mentioned, our subpool is incredibly short. Our subpools used to be filled with people who applied for teaching positions and didn't get those at first try, so they were wanting to get more experience in the classrooms. We don't have those people anymore. Because they have teaching positions. So there is a ripple effect in our quality of instruction every single day because we do not have enough subs. They're just, if they are qualified, they are in the classroom. The other is really specific to initiatives so important to our state related to the professional learning that Superintendent Holland mentioned. When we look at what we're trying to do with our K-3 reading, we have spent such really quality time, even in the past 12 months, working as a school district through our really digging deep into the science of reading and training through our letters model. And it takes time. It takes money. it takes commitment, and then that turnover happens. And it's just breaking our hearts when we see the loss of teachers, in particular in that K-3 area, because you don't get expert quickly. Expertise takes time, and so attaining our goals in reading achievement alone is a significant hit based on our teacher shortage and turnover, as well as all of the work we do around supporting work around equity and developing cultural competency for our places in Alaska. That is just diminished every time we begin training and exposure and then lose them. Alaska is a very unique place to teach, and when there's that turnover, it takes all that onboarding and ramp-up time again. So a lot of lost resources and continuity for our students. The other piece that I would just add is Superintendent Holland finished negotiations last year. We are now negotiating this year in June with all three of our groups. You know, anytime there's a supply and demand, right, that it plays a part. And so financially, the work has changed. There's a supply and demand issue. So we are in a position as a district trying to support renegotiation with contracts with a $1.6 million deficit, that the only way we could bring that to zero to do anything was remove things from our budget, and that we rely on in a scarcity of resources already, positions that have already been removed in the last decade. We've just removed more to be able to allocate to the bare minimum things that we need to do to support kids. So there is no question of financial impact when we have a lot of turnover and we have a scarcity of any resource, and then we are designing a contract to support that group. So there will be a fiscal impact as we work our way through that.
Thank you, Superintendent Weiss. Senator Begich.
Superintendent, you mentioned earlier that one of the things, it was beyond the pension question for retired teachers, also teachers feeling as though, you know, they have high morale as an issue. And so part of what SB 111 does is it focuses on the importance of improved support from the department for school districts. That's a huge portion of the bill focuses on enhancing the department's ability to support teachers and superintendents in the work that they do. Is that something that would perhaps benefit that feeling of morale or benefit? I mean, is that something that would address it?
It could be a part of the solution. I'm sorry. Through the chair, Senator Begich. I do think it could be part of that. We have some good structures, I believe, in our state outside of the department. Not that the department doesn't play an important role, but I also think that really enhancing and developing some of the existing structures through partnerships with ASA, AASB, NEA, there are some things that we could do, I think, newly and refreshed collectively to help with the morale issue and some of those support pieces of what new teachers need. How do we build those mentor programs?
Yeah, follow-up.
Follow-up, Senator Begich.
So you just mentioned mentor programs, but what are some of those things?
Sure.
The Senate bill also, that Senate bill also includes, say, the Virtual Education Consortium. Enhance that a little bit, because this is about how we retain and keep teachers, how we recruit them, and how we retain them. So give us a little more information.
Okay, great. Through the chair, Senator Begich, one example is for our new superintendents, so incoming first and second year superintendents. In the last, it existed when I became a superintendent 4 years ago, but in the last 4 years, that work has really been developed and honed by ASA. It's much deeper work now, where we create a cohort of superintendents in a year, everybody that's new and everybody that's a second year, and then that cohort rolls up the next year, and now the first year superintendents are second year, and we have a new set of first year. And so we've created this sliding two-year cohort that exists, and it is developed, supported by ASA, and a retired superintendent runs that program and develops the programming. They meet multiple times a year. There's ongoing mentor support. So that's a model that has been developed by ASA for, because superintendent turnover is as much of an issue as any of our administrators and our teachers. So that's just a model as an example that I think could be created and possibly with the support of ACSA, DEED, it could be a combined effort, I think, where we really focus in on those first and second year teachers and create some incentives for them to participate. And really use, because while we are a very broad, diverse state, we also have a lot of commonalities, right, across our state, a lot of common need through our reading initiatives, the need for equity, culturally responsive teaching, et cetera. There's a lot of things that could be more efficiently integrated from a statewide support.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. I often make that same argument that we have a lot of similarities which ought to get us moving forward on where we do have common interests, like Senate Bill 211, or
111.
And Senate Bill one, House Bill 164.
Senator Machicki?
Yeah, he didn't project that bill number was coming in any way, shape, or form, but I appreciate you bringing that up specifically. That was a joke for us legislators.
You know what they say about it, jokes that need to be explained.
Yes. Yeah. Johnny Carson type jokes. Explanation was funnier than the joke itself. So you used the number of $20,000 for a cost for training. And I'll just tell you, when we did the salary study with the Alaska State Troopers, I spent a lot of time with them because they were not including peripheral costs. And you clearly are not.
Is it to Superintendent Holland?
Well,
I believe he's the one who mentioned the $20,000 cost.
Right. I'm not quite done, but
okay.
They're more difficult to quantify, but the value is there. I mean, my example is Miss Back to It at Kenai or Soldanel has had all of our kids, and replacing Miss Back to It would be so much more expensive on the value that she brings to a classroom than a $20,000 hard cost for training. Mm-hmm. So when you're kicking these ideas around, I think you need to spend more time on that value. When you think about the intergenerational value and the, when we know our kids going to Miss Back to Its class, mm-hmm. and our last one is there now, that makes us more supportive as parents who might be willing to also testify to the legislature when you identify a gap that is a real thing and all of us care.
Mm-hmm.
All of us care. We may not be aware of the issues that you're facing. So the continuity has some real value. Mm-hmm. And I liked what you were talking about on the housing and moving expenses and some of the educational forgiveness, loan forgiveness and things like that. And I'm not talking you out of a DB plan. I'm just, you know, I hate to come back to that. But it is something we need to spend a lot more time on, I think. Because I think a lot of folks are just not aware of what you're facing. And I think a lot of legislators are in that pool as well. So aside from Senate Bill 111 that this committee worked on very hard, there's an educational outreach to the community that I think is missing on what they're facing. I still hear from people that talk about that cost of education. By golly, we should cut funding because mm-hmm. you're not getting the result. But they're not aware of what you're facing every day. There's no way for them to know about these issues. So I'll leave it at that. I know you have a lot more questions, Mr. Chairman. But
just one more from me.
It's a big picture problem mm-hmm. that the community is unaware of what you're facing.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. And since we lost, Superintendent Trainee's back, but I have this is not against you, Superintendent Trainee. I have a brief at ease. I have some questions for for our recording secretary. Brief at ease. Back on the record, we just had some questions making sure we're doing a good job of recording this thing. But so Superintendent Trainee, if you had any thoughts on the implications of high teacher turnover, financial implications or the ability of your district to provide a quality education, quality instruction? That was the question.
Yeah, thank you for the question. The continuity issue from an educational standpoint, I think, is the biggest consequence of this teacher shortage and being able to keep quality instructors. And it's, you know, it's hard to put a price tag on it. I know we talked about peripheral costs, and I saw that it's up to, I saw one study that was $50,000 and you count all the peripheral costs for a teacher and $75,000 for a principal. But more concerning to me than that is like the programming that the kid has. So we really try hard in MatSU to promote our career and technical education coursework for our students. We have about 8,000 student courses this year scheduled. That's a lot. Those positions are very hard to hire for. And so if you have, say, your teacher of fire science at one of your schools who could go make money in the actual industry at a much higher rate, maybe they've been here for 3 or 4 years and now they leave and now you're struggling trying to find the replacement for that program. And it happens all the time in CTE. And the other one that I know that all three of us share is SPED programming. Because SPED teachers are the very hardest to find, and they're in a huge demand, so they can move around a lot when they want to, because everybody wants them. You end up with your programming for your most vulnerable population getting fractured the most often. So we hire more SPED teachers, and our turnover rate is higher than any other type of teacher. And it really is, it's when you think about it, like these are the kids that need the most consistency and they end up with the least consistency because SPED teachers can go anywhere they want outside of the state or within the state. We're lucky, Kenai's lucky, Juneau's lucky because we are the magnets for our state. And so we can, you know, rob from the rural areas, but we still are victim to being robbed ourselves from the lower 48. And that's what happens, especially in these hard to fill programming spots that then leave a real hole.
That's the first time I've heard that acronym, but it's pretty easy to figure out. SPED is special education.
No, sorry.
That's okay. must be a school thing.
Can't stop.
Senator Begich.
I guess I want to ask a broader question in my mind, that there's efforts discussed in the House about adding somewhere between $40 and $60 million outside of the BSA potentially to the budget. We've had pretty clear indications that if that happened, the government would just veto it. But from what you are all saying, when it comes to teacher recruitment and retention, it appears as though more targeted, specific things, as opposed to some blanket amount of money dumped in outside of the BSA, would be a more effective way of dealing with teacher retention recruitment. Maybe we're talking about a teacher in some of the rural districts. Maybe it's teacher housing. Maybe we're talking about enhancing mm-hmm. this mentoring concept that you discussed, Superintendent. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to hear all three of the superintendents discussing the efficacy of $50 million outside of the BSA or $60 million, whatever the amount might be, versus targeted support, which we could then measure outcomes with in a way, see if they're actually succeeding.
First, I'll welcome Senator Stevens to the committee meeting. Good morning. Glad you're able to join us. Superintendent Weiss?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Holland, through Chair to Senator Begich. I am a math teacher by trade, so I love outcomes. I love metrics. I love to be able to see where possible cause and effect. And I think that there would be definitely some added value in targeted efforts, financial efforts, where we could have some concrete deliverables that then we could measure to then therefore determine where future resources go. I think that makes a lot of sense to me. I think the downside might be other superintendents may not feel that way because there might be differing needs in districts. And so what the flip side of that coin is, the more open financial commitment allows districts to really tailor it to what they need. And so maybe there's somewhat of a combination where districts could be incentivized to attain some funds based on certain initiatives and commitments to those, you know, or something. But
yeah, so a follow-up on that?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Superintendent, so math teacher, this, if the math is we pass a budget with 21 votes and 11 votes, and it goes to the governor and he vetoes it, that's mm-hmm. a multiplication by zero. and that is nothing.
Correct.
And so from my perspective, what's important to me is if there are needs and we've identified them and we know that the multiplication is either going to be zero or one, then we ought to try rather than, you know, pretend that we're funding mm-hmm. education by giving $60 million that is then vetoed. Oughtn't we to do something that ought to be, that would be a coming together of the Senate, the House, and the governor? I mean, I know you don't want to get into the political discussion, but that's a math equation. That's a zero versus whatever the amount is.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Begich, I agree with you 100%. I do think that the multiplier effect of zero is not what education needs. And public education is in a crisis right now across our country, in our state. Public education is the access point for when we talk about all students. Students lose if public education doesn't rise and survive and really be constructively thinking about our resources and what we do with our initiatives. And I agree with you and to Senator McChicky's point of the outside perspective sometimes of what we are doing with education and funding. The challenges are real. I see them every single day. The ripple effect in our families and the social emotional needs of our children in our classrooms, which therefore then takes its toll on our educators and their morale, is as real and palpable as I've ever seen it in 38 years. It is significant, and we cannot do it without resources.
I don't want to belabor the point, but just to say, Mr. Chairman, once again, the governor's been clear, at least in conversations with a number of us, that without a reading bill, there's not going to be excess funding for education, and so I'm hopeful that my colleagues on the other side are hearing this message.
Thank you. Superintendent Training, did you have any input on Senator Begich's question?
You know, I would agree that, of course, zero is not what we want. And so, you know, at some point you need to decide, you know, where the compromise is. I was trying to think through how I might answer this one. If there were funds that were set aside towards, say, a teacher retainment, and we could count on them, they weren't one-time funds. It's the one-time funds problem that ends up being an issue. Like, I could come up with a great idea, like, you know what, to try to keep people in MATSU, I'm going to offer something that we talked about in this committee. At 5 years, you're going to get blank, and at 10 years, you're going to get blank, or maybe it's at 3 and 6 and 9, whatever we came up with. But unless I knew there was a guaranteed source of funding for that, I can't even really entertain a creative idea like that, because we'd be working with collective bargaining agreement that goes out into the future, and I couldn't commit to something if I didn't know there was going to be a guaranteed source of money. So if the question comes down to should there be $60 million or not, either inside or outside, and maybe it's not, well, could we do something else? Of course, I think we all would be in favor of something else, especially if it was more permanent than a one-time boost for any one particular thing.
Thank you, Superintendent Traney. Superintendent Holland?
Thank you, Chairman Holland. I would agree with, you know, $50 million one time is better than a zero, but I really am hopeful that there will be a long-term fiscal plan for the state that will include adjustment to the BSA. If there's an inside the BSA solution, I think that'd be preferable for us. It would look out beyond this year instead of the 1 year. You know, so that said, we'll be more than happy for 1 year outside the BSA. But if there's a solution to fix that within the BSA to adjust, you know, there are two House bills right now regarding that, inflation proofing and adjusting the BSA, we'd be in favor of that for certain. So I think that is a preferable option for the long, you know, the long run of the district. I think piggybacking off what Randy said about, you know, if there were something allocated to some, you know, a specific retention, you know, bonus or whatever we want to call that, or you're looking at this bill, if there's something towards mentoring or to the cost of training our paraprofessionals to become teachers, then I'm in favor of that as well. So if it's allocated to those specific things, I think that would be great too. I just do believe for the long-term health of all of our districts, we need to adjust the BSA as well.
And my last question along those lines is, if you have had a chance to look at Senate Bill 225, is it something you think that you see something there that you could use, or even is there something that's missing? Superintendent Weiss?
Yes. Chair Holland, I will just restate, I love the bill because there's multiple things. It's not wholeheartedly on one thing, because none of our challenges are simple enough for one solution. So when we talk about the defined benefit, we talk about these three options. We talk about a mentor program. It's going to take multiple solutions. So I really appreciate that about the bill. And I would just reinforce what Superintendent Holland, I just upgraded, gave you an upgrade there, Clayton, said about the BSA. One of the hardest things at the core of what we do is try to plan our budgets a year at a time with that flat or regressing funding. And so there, the BSA to me is like eating the breakfast in the morning. Like, that just has to be a solution that we find as a state. And I am not a politician. I do not have the answers to that, but I know that it is counterproductive and faulty thinking to expect education in the state of Alaska to get better when we are not adequately funding on a yearly basis that we can plan around and design innovative instruction around, because we have to be innovative right now and we cannot do it without that. So that to me is the bread and butter that we have to do. And then we have to look at these other solutions. So I appreciate that about this bill. We need to think about that growing from within. And then we also need to look at, how do we keep people who come to Alaska? I am Alaskan. I left and I came back. I don't really care which way it happens, but we need good Alaskans as educators. And we also need to draw the best from other states. And the only way we're going to do that is through a multiple options. So I love the three options that you have in the bill. I don't have an obvious one to add right now, but I do know, I believe you've all been invited to our superintendent fly-in, our ASA fly-in soon. That's coming. I can't even tell you the date because I'm like my nose to the grindstone on a daily basis. Maybe the week after next. I don't know. But please join us, because these are the conversations that I also strongly believe in, is that collective think tank is how we will get Alaska where we need to in serving our kids. And we can't do it in isolation. You can't do it in isolation. So the more we can really engage constructively in those joint conversations, and that's one place we have to do it.
Thank you, Superintendent Weiss. Senator Bagage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to reinforce with our three superintendents, I don't think anybody here would be opposed rationally to supporting an increase, and I can't speak for them, and I've been dressed down for it in the past, so let me be clear, for increasing the BSA.
Right.
But here's the thing. It has been made clear to us by the administration, and there aren't the votes to override that, that without a reading bill, there is no increase to the BSA. So if that's the bottom line, then that needs to be addressed. And on a more narrow level, dealing specifically with this bill, we are exploring some ideas around teacher retention that might be something of what Superintendent Holland was talking about, where there might be a structure in place. You know, as long ago as when the Moore suit was being settled, we proposed in legislation, I wasn't here, I was an advocate at the time, but in 2010, the establishment of a teacher retention grants fund, something like that, you know, which would create a more permanent basis. But those things, you know, are very difficult to do when you have a structural deficit.
Right.
So Superintendent Holland is also correct that you need a fiscal plan. So here in this education committee, we are now broaching both of these critical topics, the need for a fiscal plan on one hand and the need for a reading bill on the other.
Yes.
These are part of what we need to get. So if we're going to be successful for superintendents and consequently teachers and consequently parents and children, the answer has been made eminently clear to us what we need to do. And yet there is hesitancy to do it, at least on the other side. And the question I have for you and for the other superintendents is, how valuable is it to you? And what are you willing to fight for to get there? In the meantime, we're going to try to get this bill passed, Senate Bill 225, which has it's part of the five-prong effort of the Alaska Challenge to ensure that we work off of good data, the MUG, you know, to create an opportunity to at least attempt to try and retain and recruit teachers here. So and the chairman mentioned another bill that's coming up which deals with the pension program. If we can keep five or six of these initiatives, and we are humans, we can at least think of five things at the same time. If we can keep them moving forward, and if we can get consensus around this vision with the superintendent supporting it, and if all these things move forward, it lifts up the, you know, it lifts up the, all the boats rise with that tide. So I'm hopeful that people won't get locked into one specific thing that we absolutely know isn't going to become law if other things aren't happening, and that they work for the collective whole. That's what I'm hoping for. Thank you for allowing me to lecture a little bit.
Thank you, Senator Baggins. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, and I'm probably stepping into some dangerous territory by thinking out loud. That's always dangerous, but I'm going to do it. So I'm not committing myself to this idea, but I could see right now there's in the public there's an association of the fact that we rank at the bottom, unfortunately, and I know there's pockets of excellence. I don't deny that, but and you know that just throwing money isn't the answer. That's why SB 111 is so important. But because of the recognized teachers, national teacher shortage and the fact that it's so much more difficult in Alaska, I would be open to considering not a one-time pot of money that the districts could use for anything, but a pot of money that would span maybe a 10-year period specific to teacher retention or retainment. I'm not sure which is the correct word, so that districts actually could plan. Senator Michiki had the idea of the bonuses and things like that. Because to bring our scores up, the money needs to go into the classroom. And I think that's one of the things when we talk about increasing the BSA, we're not sure how the districts are going to use it. But if we give funding that's specific to the teaching profession, specific to making sure we have, you know, good certified teachers in the classroom, that I would be a little more assured about how that would pair up with SB 111 in improving our academic outcomes for our students. So that's really what it's all about and what our goals should be. So I don't know if there's any conversation around that, but Mr. Chair, I did say it's dangerous territory for me to be talking about this, but I do think as we've been listening this year and last year as well, that this is a problem that's not going away. And we have our challenge is greater than the other states because of the circumstances here and getting folks to stay. So I would be open to entertaining that concept and would be curious. I know we're not the Finance Committee, but I'd be curious what other members would think of that idea. I'm pretty sure the superintendents, they were kind of nodding. I think they'd be fine with it. But I'd be curious what the other members would think about something like that.
And I don't feel Superintendent Weiss has to bear the burden of answering all the questions. We just tend to talk to you because you're here. But Superintendent, I'll go to Superintendent Trainee. I saw you shaking your head, nodding. So we'll just go around real quick, and then I do have a question or comment from Senator Michiki. But Superintendent Trainee?
The way Senator Hughes, the way you just described that thought, not a commitment or anything, we would be in support of that, and I think that's what I was trying to get at. If the money will be outside of the BSA because there's a recognition that you're kind of at loggerheads on some issues there politically, if there were money outside the BSA that was committed over a long enough period of time for, say, teacher retention, I think we are all going to agree that, okay, that's a good thing. I mean, I also think you hear from most superintendents like, yeah, we wanted in the BSA, but if that's not going to happen, if we have a dedicated stream towards specific things like teacher retention, that would be something that I think most superintendents would support. Did you want me to make two suggestions? I have two suggestions about what might make the bill better.
Sure, we can jump back to that question. I was looking forward to getting back to that question, but yeah. Something that you think is missing in the bill?
Just since we all have such need for hiring special education teachers, if there was flexibility about certification in that area, it might help us attract people from out of state easier. And there, I'm not a special education teacher. I'm not an expert in all of the certification, but I do know, listening to HR and my folks who work in our SPED department, that we really do run into lots of situations where the particulars of certification for SPED teachers really get in the way of us being able to hire people. So that could be looked at. And then here's a crazy Randy Traney idea that I know some people I've talked to about this before, some of the senators and House members. If we were trying to find that thing that keeps you in Alaska, that doesn't cost us any money, but makes our job more attractive than, say, the job in Washington or Oregon that pay about the same now, a four-day week would be one of those things. And it would just take a little teeny change in statute to allow a person to earn their retirement with not 172 days or whatever it is, but change that to blank hours. That could be something that could keep people here. I know in Oregon, about a third of all the districts, and they're mostly rural districts, are on four-day week now. And it's very attractive to people, and it doesn't cost you anything. In fact, it saves everybody a little something. And I know that's not tied to this bill exactly, but it's one of those creative ways that we might be able to make Alaska more more enticing to come to and stay in. If you're going to make the same amount of money but only work 4 days, you work the same number of hours. It's just something that I think that people might want to look into.
Two great suggestions, and I'll just go to Superintendent Holland. And I will admit, it is difficult saying Superintendent Holland. I'm going to Senator Holland, but if Superintendent Holland, if you see anything in 225 of particular use or that we've missed.
Yep. Thank you, Chairman Holland. And if you don't mind, I'll address a couple of the other questions I've heard.
Sure.
Also, but just going with the more pathways we have to address the teacher shortage, the better. And so I see this as Superintendent Weiss said earlier, just it's one of the prongs, or a few of the prongs are going to help us out. So the more pathways we have to get our own people, our paraprofessionals, our industry experts into our classrooms, the better for all of us. So I do appreciate what's in there. I don't know it in depth enough to offer suggestions of what would make this better. I'm going back to, you know, SB 111. That is something the Superintendent Association has supported. And locally, as I've had conversations with the Borough Assembly, you know, I've talked about that. I've talked about the BSA increase and what that means and how the accountability with SB 111 is welcome to us. You know, our key is, let's not be punitive to districts, particularly our rural districts where there's a high turnover rate and there are other concerns with that. But we're all for this. SB 111, support it. We're publicly stating that, along with getting the word out about our we wanting to increase the BSA. That's during our budget meetings. We've ended with that. We've also addressed HB 220, or is it Senate Bill 220? I'm sorry.
HB 220.
We're supportive of those. And so we are generating conversations here locally, and we'll continue to do that. I realize not everybody comes to our budget meetings or to the assembly meeting. And so we certainly do need to continue to get the word out from all of us in a coordinated fashion. And then just ending, you know, whatever we need to do, we need to be creative and find flexible means to get funding. If it's targeted for all these things we talked about, then we're going to be supportive of that as well. I just want to make sure that's out there too. But really appreciate the work and the time that this committee is putting into education and looking for meaningful changes that can be made. So thank you.
All right. Thanks, Superintendent Holland. Senator Michicki.
Yeah, so I have some news to break to all of you superintendents today, and I've been messing with my superintendent a little bit over text during this meeting sorry, Clayton. You are politicians. You're all politicians, and here's the reality. Today in politics, demagogues carry the day. They say things that people want to hear, that they either have no intention of delivering, or it's just a popular issue of the day. Popular issue of the day in education is the outcome is a problem in Alaska. So if you're asking for something, Senate Bill 111, and I'm going to dovetail on Senator Begich's comments, the governor is concerned with the outcome of education in Alaska. That should be your kind of message, right? That's, you carry that same flag. And when you talk about it, don't talk about increasing the BSA. Talk about programs that will help with the educational outcome in Alaska. Buy into that. Learn how to do that bumper sticker stuff that gets people elected, whether they actually should be here or not. It works often. So you have to think about what your communities are saying. And I don't mean play into that. Your bottom line is you want to be not number 50. You want to be number one or number five realistically soon, and then working up into that standard. But when you're looking for what will get supported by the House, supported by the Senate, and signed by the governor, it's outcome-based. Mm-hmm. So if outcome-based has to do with retaining teachers, and you know that this committee's pretty much walking in lockstep with the governor on Senate Bill 111 because of that outcome solution, then put programs together that are tied for that, to that. Put asks together that are tied to that. And I don't care who's listening to this. It doesn't like the fact that we're pushing so hard on it. That's the reality. And you've got a pretty wide spectrum of folks on this committee that understands that message. We understand a little bit of the demagoguery, but we want a better outcome that results in sort of a more comprehensive solution for education in Alaska. So you are politicians. Stop pushing that aside. Stop talking about increasing the BSA on its own and talking about why specific programs that may be included inside the increase of a BSA will result in a better outcome, better retention, and a better result for our kids. That's kind of the primary message that I'm hearing from this group, from the governor. You guys should be, I shouldn't say you guys, educators should be hearing that message and leaning on legislators to get something done that will improve the outcome of education this year. And that option is out there. So I'll stop.
Thank you, Senator Baczycki. I remember when the first person told me I was a politician, and I think they followed that with embrace the horror. But is there any other questions or comments from the committee? What I'll do is I get to sit with these guys and gals all the time. I'll just go around real quick. I'll start with Superintendent Holland. Do you have any closing comments for us?
Thank you, Chairman Holland, and just once again appreciate this group and all the work you're putting in. I know there's a big, you know, big push to solve the overall fiscal plan and create something sustainable and long-term, and that'll benefit all of us, so appreciate that work. I agree with Senator Baczycki about our messaging, that we tie in what we're asking for to outcomes. So we have been trying to do that with our BSA conversations. I realize it needs to expand to other areas as well, but we're all about, you know, hold us accountable. Look for those outcomes. Every one of us here today want to improve our outcomes. And I think when we have these conversations about spending, I've heard this a lot locally, right? First in spending, last in outcomes. You know, there's also studies out there that show when you adjust the cost of living and all of that in Alaska, we're just above average on where we are with our spending. So it's not a real accurate thing to say that piece of it. And that's my answer to some of those folks. And I think we have to look at, there's a lot of things impacting Alaska, right? We have, you know, districts that do very well. You know, for the Kenai, and I think we all have something, the Kenai SAT scores and ACT outperform the rest of the nation. Okay, that's something, you know, given the, you know, the recent disruptions, we don't have as much data in the last 2 years that we can go back to just because of COVID. But we have a lot of good things that we do, all of these districts here. And then we have parts of Alaska that struggle immensely. They struggle with family life. They struggle with a lot of other areas related to education and not to education that, and the cost of living, of course, is huge out there, but we need to provide stability to those folks as well and return, you know, with outcomes, but we need a stable workforce to do that. We're never going to get it if it's a constant turnover. Even if we stabilize here on the peninsula or the Mat-Su or Juneau, we need to look at that. And so, anyway, I just wanted to add that in there, and I appreciate all of you again and all the good work that's happening with you in the Senate Education Committee. So thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Holland. Superintendent Weiss?
I would like to finish, Chairman Holland, with we are all on the same page. So we are all in. And what I've heard you discuss today is very encouraging. The reality for us as superintendents is that we live between two worlds. We live in the chair of running a business. So as an example, which I know this is not a finance committee, but it's connected to the conversation, last year we spent $240,000 on property insurance. Next year, FY23, we're spending $1.3 million on property insurance. I have to pay that bill. So when we talk about this balance between BSA and other targeted funds, the reality is I have to run an audited budget that meets those kinds of basic needs that an organization has to pay outside of all these initiatives. So please don't hear our quest for, and I believe our discussion about BSA would be different if we had had small increases since 2017, right? So we're so far in a hole that it's hard for us to come before you and not hold that somehow in the conversation. Whether the governor or anyone else agrees or disagrees is not our concern. Our concern is that we have a responsibility to our constituents to run an agency inside of our communities that is fiscally solvent, and that's almost impossible to do right now. The other thing I would say is just that yes, yes, and yes. And I think that we support those initiatives and have, and we are truly looking to partner on these on targeted funds with committed outcomes. Because, and we cannot do it alone. If we could do it alone, we are driven people. We have dedicated decades to this commitment, and we can't do it on our own. And so we really are here to partner with you and think through strategies, not over rely on any one solution. So I know that I have really benefited from the conversation today, and just wanted to reinforce that we truly are on the same page, and it's inspiring to know that we are not alone.
Thank you, Superintendent Weiss. And finally, Superintendent Train.
Yeah, thank you for letting us testify today and try to explain some of the issues that we're facing. And then I follow up on kind of what Bridget and Holland talked about. I don't think there's any one of us who, you know, isn't behind a reading bill or an accountability measure, as long as it's reasonable accountability. That's something I think I know, speaking for me, I love those kinds of things. If I know where the scoreboard is, I get to aim directly at that scoreboard. And we can marshal our resources. We're capable people. We have lots of others who are capable. And I think we can make things better for kids. So personally, I don't have any problem with a reading bill. And if that's what it takes to get money to help us, you know, deal with these other realities that are happening, you'll have my support on that for sure. I think that's good for kids in the long run. And I do appreciate your advice that we need to talk about, you know, like the accountability part, the actual achievement part. I do think we end up losing that. And it's because of what Bridget was talking about. We do face this other reality of not enough people, not enough employees, costs keep going up. And so we fall into the trap of talking about that. But as educators, I don't think any of us are opposed at all to accountability measures where we're talking about honest student achievement and how to measure it.
All right. Thank you, Superintendent Trainee. Senator Bicicchi.
We've got 3.5 minutes left, and this is a really important conversation. So Clayton, you know I understand those things. That's really not what I'm saying. The people that you want to reach are not listening to this committee.
Yep.
They are not going to our school board meetings. They are getting their news from Facebook and from morning shows where folks that either are in this building or think they want to be in this building are saying things that people identify with, and you have to speak that language. That's my only point. So I think your communication folks should be working on this message. They have to battle in that same theater, and we don't do that very well. Those of us that are kind of operating on facts and figures and reality We don't do that well because we just know people are going to understand our point. So that's my primary point. The outcome doesn't – well, I think you understand my message. There's no disagreement here. We just need to get better at Alaskans understanding how funding requests are tied to what they want, which is a better outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Senator Bachicki. Again, thank you to superintendents for your participation and the insights you provided today. At this point, I'll set Senate Bill 225 aside. Is there anything else from the committee? Seeing nothing else before the committee, our next meeting is Wednesday, March 16th at 9 a.m., and we are adjourned at 10:29 a.m.